It's good to be with you. It's not so good that it's the last night of the meeting. I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I've never yet figured out how to say goodbye or goodnight at the end of a gospel meeting. We plan for them, we advertise them, and then before we know it, they've come and gone. And I want to thank you for your hospitality and taking such good care of my wife Marty and I. We have a few roots in the congregation here at Cambridge. For instance, I performed Kevin and Connie's wedding ceremony 45 years ago. She's just a young pup, though, because I've got my 55th coming up here pretty soon. But anyway, it's good to have her and Kevin and get to see them. Their parents attended at, or her, his parents attended at Lang's off and on, and it's just good to see them again. And it's good to have David and Annette Kenny with us. David's dad was one of my closest and dearest friends. Warren Kenny was a great pulpiteer. He was a man who could handle preaching as well than anyone or as everyone else, and maybe even more. And when he passed, I cried, because I lost not only a friend but a brother, and the church lost one of its greatest messengers. But I'm glad to see David carrying on the path that his dad got him started on. I've known David, believe it or not, since he was, he was never that short, probably about that tall, and it's good to see him. I'd tell you a couple stories on him, but I'd have to charge you but we appreciate your making the effort to be here. There are a lot of other places you could be. There's a lot of other things you could be doing, but you've chosen to be here, and we salute you for that choice, and we hope that the lesson tonight will touch your heart, and if you need to do something about your soul this evening, that you'll be moved to do that in part by the message we hear. Been talking all along about the trip from hope to heaven. Once a man or woman comes out of the waters of baptism, he is blessed with hope. Not hope that's kind of like wishful thinking or pie in the sky, but hope that I always heard when I was growing up meant something along the line of desire and expectation. You would be able to look forward to where you were going to. We've tried to build several lessons around that, and now we're going to finish the meeting with one last lesson on this theme, and I've entitled it, "The Trip Was Worth It." The trip will be worth it. In John, the 14th chapter, verses 1 through 3, Jesus is talking with the 12 about their future. And I think he must have been able to see some discouragement and some heartbreak in their eyes or in their expression, because it's obvious they were very sad and they were very, they were struggling with knowing that Jesus was about to leave. And so Jesus said to them, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going to prepare a place for you, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I'm going to come again and receive you unto myself so that you can have that home in heaven as well." That's a promise from the Son of God. He says, you've been able to grow in your faith, keep growing. You've trusted God. Trust what I'm telling you now. I'm preparing a place for you in heaven. One of these days, the trip will be over. One of these days, we'll make our last visit to the church building. One of these days, we will come to listen to the last invitation hymn we ever have a chance to hear. We're headed for home. And in heading for home, there are certain things we need to look forward to with happiness and expectation. Jesus made many references during his time here on earth to our eternal home. We read John 14 just a moment ago, where he talks about heaven and how he's coming to prepare a place for them and take them home with him. But he also, in many other places, mentioned in different ways eternity, the end of our trip. For instance, in John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, Jesus taught his disciples that there was a resurrection coming, and it would be a resurrection of life for those who had done good. We can look forward to what God has in store for us, because Jesus paved the way. He bought our ticket, so to speak. Again, in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 14, Jesus talked about a way down here on earth that leads to life. Of course, he also has to, with somewhat of a weighty heart, have to say that not living for God down here is going to create a resurrection of damnation. But for we who are children of God, we have something to look forward to that's just beyond amazing. In Mark chapter 16 and verse 16, he talked about those who believed and were baptized being saved. Saved here is something of a synonym to having everlasting life. In John 3:16, the golden verse of the Bible, we are told that Jesus came to this earth for the sole purpose of giving us eternal or everlasting life. As we make our way toward heaven, that promised home that we are encouraged by our Lord to lay up treasures in, where's your wealth? Where's what you value the most? Jesus wanted us to understand that our values have to center around him, have to center around the Lord and what he has to offer us. Inspiration tells us, according to the letter Paul wrote to the Colossians, seek those things which are above, where Christ is. Seek those affections which are above. Try to prepare yourself step by step for heaven. Look forward to that day when you reach out your hand and you feel a hand and it's God's. Look out for that day and look up to that day where we will live forever and never have to say goodbye ever again. Now, given the length of the trip and the hazards that may be encountered along the way, it's essential that we, as children of God, believe the destination is worth the trip. Paul even said in Romans, the 8th chapter, that anything it costs to go to heaven is better than to not go. He would rather suffer and save his soul than everything go right and him forget about his soul. There are three great passages that I want to very briefly share with you this evening that help us to consider that the trip to home in heaven is a trip worth the time. First of those is in Revelation chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. By the time you get to verse 4, we read the following: and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, not sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he who sat on the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And he said to me, write, for these words are true and faithful. What's heaven going to be like for us? Well, I have to admit that none of us really have that clear a picture of it. The only thing we know with certainty is it's worth the trip. However God makes it turn out, whatever God unfolds it to be before our eternal eyes, is going to be good. It's going to be beyond expectation, beyond limitations. There are several places in the book of Revelation that talk about the beauty of heaven. Sometimes it talks about the beauty of heaven and refers to the gold plating on the streets. Sometimes it talks about pearls at the gates or doors. Usually there's beautiful flowers or other gems that are mentioned in the course of trying to describe so that we can just explain or understand a little bit how beautiful it is. But you know, I've never seen a golden floor. I've never seen a gate made of pearls. Those are things that are far beyond my pay grade and my income. I never lived to make enough money to make those things an everyday part of my life. And I'm kind of glad I did, because I figured out a few years ago that if God thought I was able to handle $2 or $3 million, he'd have probably given it to me. The fact that he didn't give it to me, even I can figure that one out. You know, he knew that would be maybe a little more than I could handle. But you see, it's so hard for me to understand gates of pearl and streets of gold that I actually find more comfort and more joy in what Revelation 21 and verse 4 says won't be in heaven. And I'm not putting down what will be. It'll be beautiful, and I'll be glad to be there and have whatever God wants me to have there. But what really gets my heart pumping fast is what won't be in heaven. There won't be any tears in heaven. Tom Miller was one of my dearest friends. He's semi-retired now from preaching, lives down in the Knoxville, Tennessee area. Good man, wonderful preacher, one of my lifelong friends. I knew him for over 60 years before he moved there and I stayed up this way, and we don't get to see each other anymore. But his first wife died of cancer, and it was a tough cancer. It was one of those ones that didn't happen easy. Not many of them do, I guess, but this one was especially difficult. And he asked me if I would do the funeral service. If I remember right, there were between 700 and 800 people that gathered together in the Camden Avenue Church of Christ meeting house in Parkersburg for that funeral. I didn't cry. The first words I tried to say, I choked on them a little bit. But I didn't cry. It wasn't appropriate at that point. If I had started crying, Tom would have started crying, and it would have run through the audience rampant. But 2 or 3 weeks later, I was laying on the couch reading a book, and my son came in and said, "What's wrong, Dad?" And I was sitting there crying and kind of blustering and trying to keep my breath smooth. I'm never going to have to put up with that again. When I get to heaven, there's not going to be any tears. My family went to a string of disasters here. We consider them disasters. A few years ago, not very long ago, really, I lost two of my sisters. My older sister died of a very aggressive cancer. She had been great a year before that, and she contracted the cancer, and the doctors told my dad, "Richard, I just can't give her anything that will stay ahead of the cancer." We lost her. And within 2 years, one of my younger sisters died in a house fire. Now, I can imagine some horrible ways to die, but I don't think that I can imagine anything more horrible than dying in a house fire. My mom then, within a short period of time, died with a stroke. there were rivers of tears that flowed for those people and for we as a family. But we're never going to have to deal with tears again, not when we get to heaven. There may be a lot of things that are beautiful in heaven, but none of them will be more beautiful than eyes that don't have any tear stains on them. He also says there will be no death in heaven. I treasure that one. I've conducted 330 some funerals in my lifetime. That doesn't include the ones I visited or sat in the audience with. It seemed like every time I turn around, someone is calling me, asking me if that they're telling me they have a loved one who's not doing well and asking me if I'll do the funeral when she passes. Fact of the matter is, I got three phone calls this week, and all three of them were asking me to perform a funeral. Interestingly enough, none of the three that I'm called to do have died yet. They're still living, but they wanted me to do that. I get tired of death. I don't know about you, but I get tired of death. It's one of those things that basically ruins life down here on earth. But not when we get to heaven. We won't need any funeral homes in heaven. Anyone in the coffin business might as well fold up and close your doors because they're finished. There's not going to be any death in heaven. There's not going to be any sorrow there, Jesus tells John. Not going to be any sorrow. We all have regrets. There are all things that bug us or bother us. We all have to deal with the fact that, you know, the way we handled something may not have been the best way to handle it. There are lots of things in this life we can be sorry for, but when we get to heaven, the absence of sin will wipe away everything that would bring us sorrow and pain and suffering. Thank God that we will someday be able to say goodbye to tears, to death, to sorrow, and even pain. God's going to make sure that heaven is a place where no pain is experienced anymore. My dad and I were in Uniontown, Pennsylvania several years ago. My dad liked to work in wood, and every time they had one of those big carnival tent things that would come to town to sell tools and stuff, he'd want me to take him up, and I was taking him up, and he found a couple of things he wanted, and we loaded him in the truck and started home because I had to preach that night. And we got a little ways, and Dad said, look up on that hill. And on that hill was one of the biggest cemeteries anyone had ever seen. Down below, well, let's just put it this way. Dad looked at the hospital, and he looked at the graveyard, and he said, that doesn't instill a whole lot of comfort, confidence in you, does it? Pain. Arthur visits. Any of you talked to Arthur lately? Arthur talks to me every once in a while and tells me, you big dummy, I don't care what you think, you can't do that anymore. I'm going to have shoulder replacement surgery in June the 16th, and I'm not looking forward to it, not because of the surgery, but because the therapy is going to probably keep me from being able to squirrel hunt this fall. But at any rate, Arthur brings some pain with him when he comes. I've seen three or four people here, one of them wearing a boot, one of them wearing a sling. You know, life's full of little mishaps and things that create pain. My Aunt Bess loved to play the piano. Her favorite song is one that to this day I've never forgotten. She loved to play it. Beautiful home. Beautiful home. But as she got older, I noticed that she played it less frequently. And when she did have to play it, she would sit in the kitchen in front of the fire for, I don't know, different lengths of time from time to time. And she'd be working her hands and fingers and twisting them because they hurt so bad and they were so stiff that she had to loosen them up. You know, she's never going to have to loosen up her hands before in heaven. There's not going to be any pain in heaven. First century Christians were no strangers to pain. There are people all over the world who are hearing the gospel for the first time and their lives are being threatened or taken. They're not ignorant of pain. They felt it. They've had to go through it. But not when we get to heaven. I will have felt that I wasted that replacement when I get to heaven. Because there's not going to be any pain there. There's not going to be anything to hurt me. Think the road's worth it? Think the trip's worth ending up at home forever? I do. But a second passage is in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you. In another place, another writer, Peter, says basically the same thing Jesus said to John in Revelation 21. It's going to be different in heaven than it is here. We're not going to have to deal with some of the things that make life harder down here when we get to heaven. He says we're not going to be subject to death, and we've talked about that a little bit, but how nice to know that no matter how tomorrow goes, whether I have it to live or it's my last day on earth, I won't have to be sorry I lived it. Heaven is not subject to death and decay. Every once in a while, having grown up in Hundred, which is about an hour and a half from Pittsburgh, when I was growing up, someone would stop and say, how far is it from Hundred to Pittsburgh? And some smart aleck would always say, well, it's about 8 dead deer. You know, that's what we measured by out in Wetzel County. But what it says and what I'm trying to say is you're not going to have to worry about things like that. It's not going to be subject to death and decay. Everything we have is subject to decay. Everyone we know is subject to death. There's no age limit on it. I've had funerals for babies who died in childbirth. I've had funerals for young children, not much older than the ones riding their little scooters down the sidewalk outside. They're subject to death and decay. As long as we live down here, we are subject to death and decay. But when we get to heaven, there will be nothing up there to corrupt or to rot or to make heaven a place where death and decay takes our glory from us. It's not going to be subject to defacing or dirtying. Everybody's been talking about my West Virginia stuff. Every time I wear something that has West Virginia on it, there must be a little magnet in it somewhere that attracts whatever I'm eating, because by the time I get home, I wish I could have stood in the pulpit just like this all the time. That's why they used to make preachers wear suits and ties. When I retired, I told them I'd retire in my suits and ties too. But the fact of the matter is, it's pretty easy to make a mess, isn't it? Pretty easy to make a mess. And things in this world are subject to having messes made out of them. We've seen the homeless shelters and the ones that are living on the street. We've seen the areas of towns and cities that aren't kept up and beautiful. We've bought things that eventually wore out. You've bought a car at some point or another. It probably led you to drive all over your neighborhood, letting everybody see your new car. But it's not long till you get a little dent or scratch on it. It's not long till those clothes are out of fashion. Heaven is going to be such a wonderful place because it's not only not subject to death and decay, but it's not subject to dirtying or ruining. And thirdly, he says, it's not even subject to boredom. Not even subject to boredom. I was driving home one time from a gospel meeting. I was just above Mequeling, West Virginia, and I was listening to their religious station on WWVA. I don't know if it's still this way because I've lived out of the area for a long time. But when I was younger, if you were traveling of a night on, around the Wheeling area, your choices were pretty limited. In fact, about the only thing you could ever listen to was WWVA. And I was listening to Billy Graham. And Graham said something, and it wasn't all that often that he said something that I didn't have some problems with, okay? But that doesn't mean everything he said was bad. He said something that I've never forgotten. He said, I would like for all of you who are listening to me out there to close your eyes for a minute and picture how beautiful you think heaven's going to be. And after a couple of minutes, you open your eyes and tell God, thank you for outdoing my expectations. I love those words. I've never forgotten them. I don't know all that heaven will be like. I tell people that the best thing to do in trying to picture heaven, if you're struggling to picture heaven, is to just think of the most beautiful scene you can think of, close your eyes, then open them, and realize that as beautiful as that may be, it's going to be 1,000 times more beautiful, 1,000,000 times more beautiful when we're in heaven. Personally, for me to fully appreciate heaven, someone needs to provide a woods for me so I can take an old shotgun and a vest and go squirrel hunting. Now, do I think heaven's really going to be like that? No, but it helps me picture it. We need to understand that heaven is not subject to boredom. It's not going to lose its beauty. The home we're going to, our eternal home, it's going to last forever, and we're going to be glad of it. When my kids were little, the Cabbage Patch Kids were the rage. Any of you ever have to hunt for Cabbage Patch Kids? You're so lucky. When my children were little, they wanted everything that came down the pike. But the one thing they really wanted was Cabbage Patch dolls. I hunted Marietta and Parkersburg over and over and over, from this store to that store. And I finally found two Cabbage Patch dolls. They were in a shoe shop, of all places. And the shoe man... had put a couple boxes of Cabbage Patch dolls up out of sight in the closet. And I guess I looked so sad, and my oldest daughter Leanne's puppy dog eyes got real droopy and sad. And he says, I'll tell you what, I'll sell those to you. Boy, we'd had to have fought our way out of there if every woman that was hunting for those would have found them, you know. But we beat her to them. And when they opened those gifts in the holiday period, they were so tickled. They were so thrilled. They just couldn't believe that they each got a Cabbage Patch doll. And then about 4 weeks later, you couldn't even find their Cabbage Patch doll because they were playing with the box it came in. We get tired of things. We get to the point sometimes where it just kind of bores us not to have something new to wear or something new to fiddle with or something new to work around the house with. It's kind of like the Statler brothers. I love the Statler brothers. If you don't love the Statler brothers, we'll forgive you. But I love the Statler brothers. In fact, I cried when Lou DeWitt died. And we got to go to one of the shows on their farewell tour when they were retiring. But you know what my kids and grandkids say today? Who in the world's the Statler brothers? Yeah. Who in the world? What are you talking about? That's how we are down here. It's how things are here on earth. On this side of heaven, there are things that are going to disappoint us. There are things that are going to kind of take the beauty out of certain things, but not heaven. You'll never grow tired of it. If it lasts a million, million, million years, take for granted that it's going to last a million, million, million more. The numbers are staggering, but there's no way around it. Everlasting means everlasting. It's never going to end. I have rode my hope on the road that leads to heaven for 60-some years now. I was baptized when I was 11 years old, preached my first sermon when I was 13. Peter says, you can be thankful to God, because through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, his Son, he allows us to have the hope of heaven, and we will realize it someday when God pulls the plug and says, I've waited long enough. The third passage that I want to share with you very briefly is from Matthew chapter 18, verses 8 and 9. It's a sad reality, really, to read these verses, because it's just a reminder that no matter how beautiful heaven is, no matter what's not there, no matter what it'll never be like or the harm it might ever cause you, there's something worse. And if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter into the kingdom of heaven with one leg than having two to enter into hell. Jesus was using hyperbole there, which is a way of kind of, I don't know, what would you call it, trying to exaggerate something. That's as close as I'm going to come to it this evening. It's designed to exaggerate something that's true to make it seem even worse than it might be or even better than it might be, depending on which side you're looking at. But Jesus says, if your foot's causing you to lose your soul, if it's leading you into sin, cut it off. You'd be better off to go with one foot or one leg than go to hell or go to hell with none, or with two. And he talks about other things too. If your eye offends you, pluck it out. Can you imagine that? And on top of all of that, we still have to deal with hell. The word that Jesus used most often for hell was the word Gehenna. Gehenna was taken from an Old Testament address about a piece of property that belonged to a man by the name of Hinnom. And as he grew older, it passed to his sons, and it was known as the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom. It was located outside of Jerusalem, not too far away. And it had become, through the years, because of some idolatry and other things that had caused it to be made unclean, had been experienced. And once it was cleaned up a little bit, it became Jerusalem's garbage dump. We had a junk dump hill at 100. I assume you probably, this used to be one around Cambridge too, probably. Ours was located, if you were coming into 100, it was located just to the left on the last hill that would you go down to go to 100. When Jesus talked to people about going to hell, using figures of speech, he was telling them something to the effect of, do you really want to be a part of God's garbage dump? I get to look forward to heaven. Some have to look forward to hell. You can choose differently. You don't have to believe, or you don't have to face hell and God in the process. But getting to heaven would be worthwhile, even if we had to go through hell to get there. The road is straight and narrow. And I know the road to heaven won't always be as smooth as we would like it to be. And I don't have answers a lot of times to the who's and what's that people ask in the midst of suffering and pain and death. I wish I did. But then again, if I did, there would be people who would try to misuse that knowledge. And that wouldn't be right either. But getting to heaven may not always be as calm and smooth and easy as we would like for it to be. I know that a lifetime is a long time to be committed to any one thing. We celebrate people for being married 25 years. We celebrate people for being married 50 years. I read just not very long ago about a couple that just celebrated their 72nd anniversary. Talk about robbing the cradle. They were both in the cradle when they when they met, I think. But those are counting the years that we live under. Those are long times. But not nearly as long as everlasting. Not nearly as long as eternal. I know that some things along the way from here to home will seem awfully unfair. But it'll be worth the trip. Because once we get there, we won't be pilgrims anymore. We'll be home. I can hardly wait. I don't wake up every morning saying, God, now would be a good day for you to take my life. I don't do that. But I'll tell you what I do do. When I wake up of a morning, I stop and tell God how thankful I was for the night's rest. And I tell him, God, if this is my last day, I thank you for the promise of home. We all need to learn to look up and say, God, keep that mansion ready. I'm going to be coming home soon. If you're subject to the invitation right now, you'd be better off having your foot cut off or your eye plucked out or your arm cut off and find forgiveness than to cling to things like that and be lost. So we do what we've done every service of this gospel meeting. We sing an invitation hymn. It's designed to get you to thinking about your soul, following through perhaps on the plans you've been thinking about in terms of needing to be baptized, we're here to help you do that. You have to choose to, but we're going to sing a song to encourage you to. And when that song starts, there's no better place for you to be than making your way down the middle of this aisle so that your soul can receive the attention it needs and the forgiveness that will allow it to flourish. If you need to come, we hope you will, or we'll pray with you if you're struggling in sin or in unfaithfulness as well. If you need to come, come so that you can go home later. Let's stand and sing the invitation hymn.